Welcome back to the Mike Shamari Show. My guest today was the voice of John Arbuckle in the Garfield specials and on Garfield and Friends, which is now available on DVD, volumes 1 through 3, and respectively, and volume 4 will be coming out later this summer. He is currently the news director at Bighorn Radio Network out in Cody, Wyoming.
Good morning, Mike.
Tom Hughie, everybody.
Hey, ta-da. Wait, no. No, I'm Barbara Streisand. No, wait, no, I'm not. No, you were right in the first place. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm good.
Good.
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
All right.
Loving Wyoming.
Wonderful. Well, let's start in the beginning. How did it all start in this business for Tom Hughie?
Well, it all started at a small 3,000-watt radio station. No, wait. I think it was Ted Knight's explanation. Gosh, it started with falling in love with music and theater in high school and going on to college and pursuing those interests then, and as well as broadcasting at the time, and began my career out of college basically working in broadcasting. I was started at a television station in Indianapolis, Indiana. I was a floor man, film editor, prop guy, you know.
Wow.
It was an entry-level deal.
Mm-hmm.
And went from there, ended up getting into radio after that, after about a year and a half of that, and was a disc jockey and a production person, and I just fell in love with producing radio. So I went to work for a studio and did that for 4 or 5 years, a couple of different recording studios in Indianapolis, but basically voiceover studios. We were doing commercials.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, industrial things, AV projects, stuff like that. Just absolutely loved it, and began to develop my voiceover career during that time. I was sitting there at the control board at this recording studio and about to do a session, and the ad agency guy was there, and his announcer didn't show up. He said, "Well, Tom, can you read?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I can do this." So I did, and he liked it, and he used me a few more times, and then word began to get around, and that was really how that started. That went on through the 70s, the mid-70s, and in 1977, I decided that I needed to find out if I really was, if I had it. And so I went to Chicago and found an agent, had a great relationship with him. In fact, my very first audition for him was for a McDonald's national television commercial.
Hmm.
On camera, I got the job.
Wow.
Okay, my first audition in Chicago. And I said, "Whoa, they've been waiting for me."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I didn't get another job for 4 months, okay? But it gave me immediate validation. It gave me this huge sense of belief in myself that, oh, I can compete in this arena. You know, I was in a union market doing national work, and I was quite content to do that for a while. I need to back up just a second. When I was in college,
mm-hmm.
I belonged to a fraternity, and one of my fraternity brothers was a guy named Jim Davis. And he's a year younger than me. He was the year behind.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim and I became very fast friends.
Talk to us about that.
Well, we just had this symbiotic, I don't know what it was. I mean, he'd be walking to campus, and I'd be walking back to my place, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, just passing ships in the daytime there. And we'd bump into each other, and just we'd talk for an hour. You know, Jim would miss his class, or I would mine, because it was so much fun. And that was really the birth of our relationship. Then after we both got out of school, you know, I was the struggling actor and producer and ad guy, and Jim was doing. He was working as a cartoonist assistant for T.K. Ryan, the cartoonist that did a comic strip called Tumbleweeds.
Mm.
About the West,
okay.
Really cute strip, and Jim was his assistant. He did inking and ran a lot of errands. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And all the time that he was working for Ryan, he was working on his own ideas for his own strip. And he started out with a strip about insects, and it was really cute. The writing was wonderful, but he couldn't sell it to any of the syndicates. So then it gets, and, you know, nobody thinks bugs are funny, okay? So he hit upon this idea of this cat. And it's interesting to see how the cat has evolved visually. He hasn't changed much from a personality standpoint, you know. But over the years, he got much better looking. He was when Jim first started Garfield, the character was real funky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was pretty neat actually. I kind of missed that. You know, hated to see it go the other way, but for a lot of reasons, I think he saw why it was necessary to do that. Just from a commercial standpoint, largely, you know, so that there'd be some adaptation for product, and that would all go a lot easier. And so, 1978, Jim convinced United Feature Syndicate that this was a good idea, and so they signed him. And you know, for a syndicated or for a cartoonist, that's just absolutely critical. I mean, there are literally thousands of cartoonists who try to get syndicated and never do. And this just basically launches you. I mean, that's your sales force. And as a cartoonist, you don't have any other way to sell your product, or at least you didn't back then. It wasn't long after that, and CBS began to express some interest in some television work, and they did a short, it was an hour special called Those Fantastic Funnies, that was hosted by Lonnie Anderson. And what they did was they just got a bunch of comic strips and animated them. Okay, they weren't regular cartoon features anywhere, you know, not doing Saturday morning or anything like that. They just had been in the papers forever, you know, and Garfield was one of them. And they did Beetle Bailey, did a couple of others. Anyway, Jim said, Tom needs to be the voice of John. He knew my work as an actor, so made it possible for me to do that. Then a year or so later, they decided to start doing primetime specials. And the very first special that they did, I was not in.
Mm-hmm.
CBS insisted that be a Los Angeles actor. That was the world they knew.
I think it was Sandy Kenyon, right?
Right, I believe so. And shortly after that, they started talking about special number two, and Jim really took my cause to heart. I didn't even ask him to. He just went to CBS and said, this is the guy I hear for this. Let him audition. So I put together an audition tape of the voice and sent it out, and they all said, that's fine. Okay, now remember, I'm this actor back in Indiana and Illinois, and this show's going to get produced. All these shows got produced in Los Angeles. So that was kind of a big investment for the producer, for Lee Mendelson, because when we recorded, they had to fly me out to L.A. to do the recording sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, one or two specials a year, not a big deal, and they could afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, I went to work for Jim. In 1984, I went to work full time for Jim as a television producer and writer and creative director. And his excuse me, I'm struggling with some bronchitis here. He was determined to create a new comic strip, and he wanted to do one that would appeal to children. You know, comic strips, syndicated comic strips, or any comic strips in general, or even panels, aren't written or made for kids. They're really made for adults. Okay, because kids don't read newspapers, historically. and Jim said, you know, we need to change that. We need to build a new audience. We need to draw kids into this and learn, you know, give them a chance to learn to like to read newspapers. And United Feature Syndicate thought it was a good idea. So we worked very hard at Jim's studio, and keep in mind this is a place that basically existed to take care of the licensing business for Garfield. Okay, it's a company called Paws Incorporated, and at the time there were 45 employees, something like that. A lot of artists and designers, cartoonists, and some business people, and you know just the normal mix you'd see in an office, also. So I joined that crowd, and we worked with some of the artists and with Jim and me, and and a couple of other folks there on staff and developed this property that we ended up calling U.S. Acres, which is a comic strip about a farm, a bunch of little animals on a farm. Jim felt real good about that because that's where he grew up. You know, he grew up on a farm in Indiana and felt like he could relate to all of that. And it was great. It was a great joy being part of all that and helping him develop these characters and create, you know, brand new characters. That comic strip debuted a couple of years later, like in, I think it was 1986, in 500 newspapers. That was unheard of at the time.
Wow.
Okay, when Garfield debuted, he was in, like in 45 or 50. Okay? And of course, that was all based on the strength of Jim and the Garfield reputation. Because that was a period of time when Garfield was incredibly hot. It was a period of time when, remember the Stuck on You, the Garfields that were on car windows?
Yes, I do.
Okay, they called them Stuck on You, Stuck on Yous. And that was going on, and just was a huge accidental hit. And so everybody was a real promoter for Jim and believed in him. I think a lot of people still do, actually. But so the syndicate embraced it. Newspaper editors bought it. What we didn't understand, the mistake we made was that comic strips, new comic strips, get introduced in a newspaper for a certain amount of time, and it's up to the editor's discretion. It might be 3 months, it might be 6 months, and then they do something called the scream test. Okay, S-C-R-E-A-M. They yank it. They take it out, replace it with something else, to see if anybody complains. That tells them, if people are complaining, that means, oh, it had a following, and they put it back in. Okay?
Did people complain?
Did
people complain?
About it being missing. Follow?
Yeah.
Okay. But what we didn't count, and we knew that. We knew that's how it worked. But what we forgot was that kids don't write letters. Okay? So it could be, you know, and we'll never know now, but it could be that we had quite a large following. But the kids didn't know what to do about that. You know, that this was a comic strip that was really aimed at, oh boy, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, 9, 10, that age group. So, as a comic strip, it began to drop circulation. And during that same period of time, we were shopping the comic strip property as a Saturday morning TV series. Because we thought that would give it a great shot in the arm for the newspaper business, okay? I mean, Jim's a cartoonist, and that was the world he lived in and what he understood really well and believed in that. And so it felt like if he could give them some reason to stick with it, the newspaper editors, you know, if they saw it on Saturday morning all of a sudden, then maybe they'd keep the strip. And nobody at the networks wanted to buy that. They didn't want to do just U.S. Acres. They all wanted Garfield. So we ended up negotiating a show called Garfield and Friends, which is two-thirds Garfield stories and one-third U.S. Acres, hoping that we could, you know, bolster that push a little bit, and maybe it would catch on. As an actor, I have to tell you that I absolutely loved working on U.S. Acres. I mean, I did Roy the Rooster, Gort the Pig, I think, and a couple of other characters like that, and they were just great fun, and Mark Evanier, the writer, just was wonderful, wrote us some great material. And I also got to work with people like Howie Morris, okay? Howie played Wade the Duck.
Wade Duck.
And he was just an absolutely hysterically funny man. And one of my, you know, heroes from my boyhood. I mean, Howie was on your show of shows with Sid Caesar and Imogene Coca. But anyway, we had great fun with that. It just, unfortunately, never caught on. The TV series was a hit. I mean, it was on for, I think, 7 years.
7 years, yes.
Yeah. Excuse me.
No problem.
And not only was it the first year was a half hour. Every year after that, it was an hour show. That's phenomenal in the television world. You know, I look back on that with a great sense of pride, and really warm feeling, and feeling like we had a success there. you know, to last that long. I mean, some TV series only last a few episodes. And we were, not only were we not a half hour, we were an hour show that after the first year went another 6 years. Great joy in all of that production process. I got to work with some of my personal heroes. I got to work with people like George Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones?
James Earl Jones, excuse me. Yeah. or what's his name? Stan Freberg.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know who Stan
is. Oh, I know who he is.
Okay.
I know who Stan Freberg is.
Well, okay. you know, the history of America, part one or whatever. Stan was I grew up on his comedy and went to school on him. It was some of the most difficult recording sessions I ever did, though, because he came in and he was doing some of his stock characters that I remembered, and I just couldn't stop laughing. Okay? This was not exactly the pinnacle of my professional career. I just had no discipline. He would start reading in one of those voices that I remembered so well, and he just put me away. Gee whiz, Harvey Korman, Pat Harrington, Imogene Coco did a show, Don Knotts did a few shows.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a wonderful group of people,
Buddy Hackett,
who a lot of whom were past stars who weren't anymore. You know, they weren't the hot deal anymore. And as you may or may not know, Hollywood tends to spit people out. I mean, they use them up and then say, "Well, you're yesterday." And these were a lot of folks who just wanted to work, and we just blissfully invited them to come join us. We also had a good reputation in the voice and acting community. Our show was unlike most others. Most other shows, when they recorded them, were pretty sterile. They were very careful never to overlap voices, for instance, so that they could edit later. If they needed to shorten something, they could take stuff out, and they wouldn't have to bring the actors back in to re-record a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we said, "The heck with that! Let's kind of roll the dice and let actors be actors." And so it was a wonderful acting experience for everybody involved, and kind of juicy in just the very best way possible. I mean, it was just a wonderful chemistry. So the word began to get around, and so we didn't have a lot of trouble getting a lot of these people to come work for us, and we didn't pay much. We didn't have much of a budget. It was just a Saturday morning animated show, so a lot of people came to work for scale, and that just thrilled us. I mean, they just loved it and wanted to come back. It was a great experience.
We've only scratched the surface. More with Tom Hughey coming up later. We'll be right back.